Thank you. So let me just give an update on Israel before we get into the class material today. And of course, if you, I've got two more in the waiting room. Sorry, let me get those in. Well, Donna Chupp is coming in and Don Moore's, I thought they were in, but they're coming in again, I guess. No. Okay, I think everybody's in now, so let's go on. Fighting has begun again, and as much as some of us didn't want that to happen, we kind of expected it to happen. The net of it is what happened here was Hamas finished giving back hostages, and they wanted to start trading male hostages for some of the high-ranking prisoners that Israel has in the jail. And Israel said, we want our ladies and our kids back. And if we don't get them back, then we're not going to do anything. And so Hamas said, started firing rockets at them. So, you know, that was the end of that deal. And Israel has brought their negotiating team home from Gutter. So I think that's at least off for a while. I think, you know, we're beginning to see this ratchet up again. If you've been paying attention to the news, if you watch any of the Israel news, the attack against Hamas in Gaza has gone back to its peak levels. You know, they're leveling buildings, they're blowing up houses, they're pushing it down, they're blowing up tunnels. They've got a naval bombardment going on from the sea. They've got Air Force bombardment from the air. They've got drones flying over looking for terrorists and tunnels. All of that is going on right now. And we're not getting a whole lot of information, but my suspicion is, based on what I see, is the fighting has gone back to the very high level it was right before, you know, they had the brokered ceasefire. So I don't know exactly what is going to happen there, but I think we'll see in the next few days what's going to happen. I suspect that we have seen the end of the hostages coming for a while. One of the reasons I think that is a number of them that they knew were alive have been declared dead in captivity. A woman and her two, those the two redheaded kids, if you've seen those, that are about 6 or 7 years old, and the mother, they're being declared dead now by Hamas. And there's a number of others that have died. And I suspect, this is just speculation, I suspect that they've gotten to the end of the easy ones to give away. And the ones that are left are either in such bad shape or they're dead that they do not want to turn them over because it'll incite Israel incredibly if they do that. So I think they're just leaving it alone. That's my personal opinion. But Israel has sensed that is that's the answer, and they're going after them, you know, tooth and tong, if you will. So I don't know what's going to happen. We're beginning to get a few stories now from the hostages that have come back. You know, what you would expect. You know, you've got torture, you've got rape, you've got women being and children being left in cages for days. One meal a day, if they get that, no medicine for some of the ones, especially the elderly patients who are ill, and that's probably why some of them have died. And then the men who are of fighting age are being kept separate so that they, you know, if they need to use them as bargaining chips or as shields, you know, they'll do that. I don't know where we're going to go. But all of those instances that we're seeing now are coming back into Israel as they interview all the hostages as to what they saw and where they saw it and where they were kept and all of that. So I think there's going to be a lot of things happening there. The other thing I will say is during this time of hiatus of fighting, two things have happened. Hamas fighters put on their civilian clothes and they walk around the streets and they make notes of where the Israeli positions are. And Israeli observers fly drones and they make notes of every head that pops out of a tunnel. So my guess is we're going to see some precision efforts here in the next week. Both the Hamas going to try to pop up and shoot a few Israelis, but also Israelis are prepared because they know where all the tunnel holes are, at least most of them now. So I think they're prepared. It's not anywhere near finished, I don't believe. So it's going to be a difficult time in the next week. So Pray for that. I do think there's a lot of increased activity also in Israel in the what you would call the Samaria, maybe what you would call the West Bank, Eastern Jerusalem, because even though they're not Hamas, a lot of the Palestinian jihad people are in Israel themselves, and they are doing things. It was a knifing attack. And if you've been to Israel, probably know what the green buses are. Have you ever seen the green buses? Okay, so the green buses, for those of you don't know, are the buses that only Jews ride on. So they have various bus stops with green signs, and the Jews get on there because, you know, it takes them to their various places, you know, and they don't have, you know, us Gentiles on there with them. So they have green buses. Well, the green buses are being attacked, as you might expect. They're either showing up with knives or weapons. But Israel is ready for that, I believe. And so in East Jerusalem and in two of the West Bank cities, Jenin and Nablus, they're under extreme pressure now from the IDF. They're looking for all the little squirrel holes and all the people that are hiding weapons. And they're finding a bunch. Some of them have been smuggled across from Jordan. Some of them have come in from, you know, Lebanon. Some of them have come in from Hamas down in Gaza. But they're finding a lot of weapons and confiscating them. So I think Israel is prepared for internal conflict here in the next few weeks as they begin to shut Hamas down on a much larger basis. The other thing I would expect, let me get to page two here. Comment two, don't be shocked if a number of high-ranking Hamas officials show up dead in places like Qatar and other places that they're hiding. They won't go, they don't want to live where the Palestinians live. They live in, you know, million-dollar apartments in exile. So I wouldn't be surprised to see that. The other thing I'll tell you is, just kind of as a side, Mossad, Shin Bet, yep, probably the two of them. Israel won't claim responsibility, but they'll just be dead somewhere. So the other thing I'll say is that I saw yesterday where some of the non-Israeli airlines, in other words, not El Al, like Delta and United and some others that fly in there, have postponed their resumptions of flights to Tel Aviv till either late 2024 or early 2025, which if that's not changed, is going to create a real financial hardship for Israel, because they, you know, their economy so depends on tourism. So that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out as well. I just think it's going to be interesting in the next 6 months to see. Now, if they get it all squared away, these airlines will probably go back, you know, because they want the business. They just don't want to fly in danger, and they don't want to put their people in danger. So it's going to be interesting.
You know, UN sent like 200 tractor trailers in, you know, for humanitarian relief.
Right.
What are those people doing there? Why didn't they move south? I just wonder, there's so many people there still that are not fighters, that are maybe family members or just the general populace, children.
It's interesting because they've moved to South Gaza. And South Gaza has not been attacked like northern Gaza, where all the tunnels are. But a lot of the fighters have also moved into South Gaza. And one of the things you see is when they bring hostages out to trade them, and Hamas wears their full green regalia, you know, all the Palestinian non-combatants, if you will, cheer them on, you know, cheer on the Hamas people. So I'm not sure who is innocent and who isn't over there. I'm not sure we'll ever know that, but I think some of the ones that are obviously hostile are being taken out. But I think a lot of that aid is going to go to the Hamas people, because they pose, you know, they're tied in with the International Red Cross. Why the Red Cross didn't go look at all these hostages and see what their condition, I don't know. They wouldn't go. But now they want to be front and center when they're being handed over. You know, so I don't know. There's a lot of things. The UN over there has been pretty much in bed with the Palestinians. So it's hard to see a neutral party there now. I don't know if there is a neutral party there. The UN's not neutral. The Red Cross, International Red Cross, is not neutral either. So It's just going to be kind of sticky, but I think Israel has got a good plan for it, and they're moving forward every day. They're squeezing further south. They will go into South Lebanon, the South Hamas or South Gaza. They will go down there and they'll look for tunnels and they'll do everything else. There's a Khan Yunis is a town in South Gaza where a lot of wealthy people live. And they've gone to three or four of the big neighborhoods and told them to get out and go south, because my guess is they're going to go house to house and they're going to blow up houses and tunnels and everything connected to them. So we haven't seen the end of that. And we haven't seen the end of the squalling either. There's going to be squalling, you know, from all the countries that want the, they don't care what happens to Israel later. They just want it to stop now. And we'll be probably on that bandwagon in the US. I think we're getting closer and closer to that right now. So I would just say there's nothing we can do right now. I mean, we can, you know, express our support for Israel, but I mean, they've got to go through what they've got to go through to win this war. But if we pray for the peace of Jerusalem, we think of peace as an absence of conflict. But if you think of peace as shalom peace, which is the peace of God, it's really much different than just an absence of conflict. It's really that a peace, a spirit of peace will settle over the land. And that's what I pray for. You know, the old adage, and it's very true, that if Hamas laid down its arms today, the war would be over. If Israel laid down its arms today, they'd be attacked. So I think we understand the spirit of the Antichrist is in that hate-filled other side. Not to say Israel does everything right, because they don't, but I think in this case it's pretty easy to see, you know, which is the more righteous and which is the less righteous in terms of God. So any thoughts about that? Anything before we move on? Yeah, Joe.
Two things. I've read, and I preface that because what you read is not always true.
Right.
Israel is bringing in workers from a little tiny town under tiny country next to Zimbabwe, and they're bringing them into northern Israel to harvest crops. And because it's built a lot. And Bethlehem is closed down. There will be no Christmas in Bethlehem, which affects Christians and Catholics, Greek Orthodox and Catholics,
Right.
and
And
Armenians.
tourists, but there's no tourists there probably right now.
Janet, my cousin, took food there for the Baptist ministry that's there, and she had lots of
Yeah, Joe made the point that in Israel right now it's the farming season, and a lot of the farmers have had to abandon their areas, and so they're going back to work. But a lot of the workers who would be working the farms are not available, so they're bringing workers in from another country to help them, kind of like migrant workers to help them do that. And that Bethlehem itself has been closed down for Christmas, and it always brings to my mind, and I'll just say this: if you're a Christian, are you a Christian first, or are you an American first, or are you a Palestinian first, or are you a Jew first? I think Christians should be Christians first, and then whatever other affiliation is your earthly kingdom, not your heavenly kingdom. But in over there, if you're a Palestinian Christian, they're really Palestinians first, and they follow the Palestinian mantra, and then they'll worship as they have time. And we see that in things like closing Bethlehem down. It's a punishment for Christians because that's what they want to do. And so, you know, I think it's kind of an interesting thing to look at from a side. And Joe, I thank you for bringing it up, because it's been on my mind, but I didn't write it down, so I didn't do it.
You know, the same with
Yeah.
denomination. When I was born and raised Lutheran, and I was Lutheran, you know, if anybody asked me, I was Lutheran.
Yeah.
And when I moved over to the Baptist Church, I now am a Christian. If somebody asked me what I am, I'm a Christian. And I think we should remember that.
Oh, I do too. You know, there are no denominations in heaven. Whether you're a believer or not a believer is all that matters. And whether you're a Methodist or a Lutheran or a Baptist or whatever, as long as you are a believer, you are
I think there'd
part of
be
the
more
church.
Lutherans in heaven than Baptists.
I'm not going to go there.
That's because they were real strong about 100 years ago, and they're all dead.
Yeah, so I'm just going to leave that alone. Any other comments or questions before we move on to Daniel? Yeah, Carol.
I think, if I'm correct, I read somewhere recently that there's a farmer's group up in Wyoming or Montana or somewhere. Here there's a bunch of them going over to Israel.
They are. So people with boots and hats are showing up. Texas and all over from the Midwest are going over there to help them, you know, gather their crops and do whatever farm tasks need to be done. So I think that's encouraging. That, by the way, is the kind of people-to-people ministry that makes such a difference in a world where there are so many Jews who are, I'll say, not really comfortable with Christians because of history and because of the way they've been taught. But this kind of people-to-people ministry makes all the difference in the world. You know, because now you get to know somebody who's a different faith and your animosity is not quite the same. So I think that's a positive for everybody, both the people going and, of course, the Israelis, you know, on that side. So, okay, we're going to move to Daniel. So let me talk a little bit about understanding the approach that we're going to take on chapter 12. Remember, Daniel is a book about events that happened. It's a book about prophecy. It's a book about visions. And many of the things that Daniel predicted have come to pass. Daniel wrote his prophecies in around 500 BC, give or take. And, you know, most of the ones that we've studied so far came to pass within about 200 years of that. And that's the whole sequence of the dynasties that ran the earth, you know, the Babylonians and then the Medo-Persians and then the Greeks and then the Romans. We didn't spend a lot of time on the Romans because that wasn't a big part of this. But we did spend time on the others, and we saw Daniel's prophecy through history actually come to pass and come to pass very literally. So one of the things we've now going to look at is some things that have not come to pass. We did a little bit of that last week. We're going to do more of it today. And because of what's happened and the accuracy of Daniel in the past, we make some assumptions about what we're going to study today. And those assumptions are these. This, what we're going to read is true, and it will happen even if we don't understand it. It's God's word, and it will come true. And if you believe in prophecy, as I believe in prophecy, what you believe is that it's history written in advance. So it's God's view of history that some writer wrote in his own terms, in his own vernacular, in his own worldview, but he wrote something that's going to happen in the future. They're not as detailed because I don't have history to go back and look at. So what we're going to look at today is not historic, but it's certainly predictive. And there's much that we cannot know about it. I'll speculate on a few things, but it's just that. It's speculation. I don't know all of the information. The other thing I would say is these will be fulfilled literally. And I say that because the Messiah's prophecies will fulfill literally. Daniel's prophecies will fulfill literally. There's no reason to believe these prophecies regarding the second coming of Christ or the tribulation period will also not be literal. So I believe they are literal, unless you know, it's obvious from the context they're not. The other thing is Daniel did not understand them. And I will say by the time we finish, neither will we. But we'll understand more than he did because time has passed. And one of the things that the pastor mentioned, if you've been recently, is prophecy over time becomes clear to us. What wasn't clear 100 years ago is clear now. You know, he talked about Israel not being in the land, and now they're in the land. So many things can happen now that Israel is in the land, all of the prophecies for the end times. The fact that global communications, the internet, something can happen in Gaza, and we watch it on our phones because somebody videoed it. We have instant communications. Well, some of the things in prophecy require that, and we didn't know how they would work, but now we do because we see technology. And yet there are so many things still unknown to us, and we're going to come to some of those today in chapter 9. But what it does do is it gives us a framework for looking at future events so that we understand what's possible, what's likely, and understanding also that many of the things that are prophesied are both physical events and spiritual events. You know, when he talks about the wars of angels, we don't see that. But that doesn't mean it doesn't happen. It happens, you know, in time and space. I mentioned last week I was going to bring this book, and I think he found it. And it's called Nine Wars of the End Times. I don't do as good a job of separating, you know, War One and Two and Three and all that. But it is an interesting book because what it does is it lays out the differences between the spiritual wars and the physical wars and when they happen in the end time. So if you're ever interested in that, this is a good book written by a guy named Dave Reagan. He runs a ministry called Lion Lamb Ministry in McKinney, Texas. He's a great end time author and speaker. He's about 87 or 88, and he just gave up his, didn't give it up. He's still there, but he turned it over to two other people who are now the evangelists for it. But it's a good ministry. They have, you know, you can listen to them online or you can get apps and all that kind of stuff. But if you want to listen to that, you can come up and write this down or do whatever and see what it is that's available. So with that, we're going to start chapter 12. And I want to take a minute. Let me get to my notes here, make sure I'm on the same page as my notes. So my book has a section title called The End Times, and that's what this is called in my Bible, The End Times. And it starts, I'm going to read chapter verse 1 because I want to talk about verse 1. It says, at that time, Michael, the great prince who protects, I think this says your people, and I move this out of the way. Yep, your people will arise. There will be a time of distress such as has not happened from the beginning of nations until then. But at that time, your people, everyone whose name is found written in the book, will be delivered. This is an interesting statement because it covers a lot of things. First of all, at that time means at the end time. This is really speaking of the time of the tribulation, the time of the second coming. It's that whole epoch of time that encompasses Daniel's 70th week, which we talked about once before. So at that time, in the end, if you will, Michael, the great prince who protects your people, will arise. So we talked about two angels that are mentioned in the book of Daniel. One of them is Michael. Michael's an archangel. And there's really a whole study of angels is interesting. You know, there's a lot of speculation there, but Michael's called an archangel. Gabriel is thought as an archangel, although he's not called that in the Bible. But they're both angels of presence, which means they stand in the presence of the Lord. They're not some angel off in a back room that they call in. These are two important angels. They're what? Yeah. Yeah. They're his wise men, if you will, so to speak. But they do have particular functions. Michael, whose name means who is like God, which is kind of an interesting name for an angel, he is an angel who protects the Jewish people and the nation of Israel. So you see him in Revelation, you see him in a number of books. When it comes to the wars, both spiritual wars and physical wars, Michael is involved with the nation of Israel. You can't look at Israel's history since 1948 and not see the hand of God in the fact that they're even surviving today, you know, and the languages come back to life, all of that we've talked about. And I don't know what role Michael plays, but he plays a role in it. Under God's direction, he plays a role. The other angel, of course, is Gabriel, and Gabriel means mighty man of God. And Gabriel is the angel who talks to people. He's the angel that comes out and talks to Zechariah and Mary and the shepherds. He talks to a lot of people. And so he's an angel that brings messages, but they're both important archangels, angels of presence. So at that time, Michael, who protects you, will arise. In other words, something's going to cause him to come out of his place in heaven and begin to do something. And he says, there will be a time of distress such as not happened from the beginning of nations until then. This is speaking of the seven-year period, the tribulation period, which we also know is also called the time of Jacob's trouble. And if you think about the tribulation period, we tend to think about it from a Gentile point of view or a Christian point of view. But the reality of it is there's really two reasons for the tribulation period. One of them is for God to finish his business with the Jewish people. And by that, I mean, it'll be fish or cut bait time with them. They're either going to come to the Lord or they're not. And this is going to be the time when that happens. Yes, there will be Gentiles saved as well. But the purpose of this, as you'll see here and in other prophecies, is to bring Israel back into the fold as God's chosen who believe in him. So this will be a time of distress, and Michael will be there to protect and guard Israel and to guard its people. And then he says, but at that time, your people, talking to Daniel now, and so who are his people? His people are the Jews, right? And then he adds this little interesting phrase, everyone whose name is found written in the book will be delivered. I'll make two comments here. One of them is there are some people, Christians in particular, who love Israel, who think there is a dual covenant strategy. In other words, God has a separate deal with the Jews than he does with Christians. And Jews can be saved in a different way than Christians. I don't believe that personally. And I think this phrase gives us the clue to that. At that time, your people, the Jews, those whose names are found written in the book will be delivered. That implies that there are people whose names are not in the book and they will not be delivered. Delivered here means redeemed or saved or brought close to the Lord. So I think this is interesting. Now, as you go back and you look at some of the things that have to take place, I think it gives us a couple of ideas. If you recall, let me just kind of little bit of a panorama here for a second. Remember, I kind of believe in dispensational timeframes, and I know that's not a good word in today's world, but let me tell you why I believe it and what it means. It means that at different times in the history of man, God deals with the people on earth differently. He dealt with the people in the Garden of Eden before sin differently than after sin, right? Once Adam and Eve fell, he dealt differently. Now, people have all kinds of little dispensations, but if you stick to the main ones, that was the plan until the time of Noah. After the flood, God dealt with people differently than before the flood. Now, you know, people think, well, you know, time of Moses, the lawgivers and all that. But understand that people in the Old Testament didn't get saved, if you will, just by being Jewish. Remember, Esau was not the chosen one. You know, Jacob was the chosen one. And so just the DNA doesn't matter. It has to be, you have to be a child of the promise. And the promise is what you believe. And we get to see a further of that as we get down into the discussion of, who is and who isn't in. All people in the Old Testament, remember the story of the beggar and the rich man, Lazarus. Remember that little story? I think we did that in Matthew. So anyway, it's either Matthew or Luke. I don't remember which one it is. But anyway, there's two realms to Hades. Hades is the realm of the dead in the New Testament, Sheol in the Old Testament. You had one realm that was separated from God by a gulf. You had another realm, which was called Abraham's bosom. And that meant you were in the good side, if you will, of Hades. And there's speculation here, but a lot of people, and I'm one of them, believe that on that Saturday when Jesus left the grave and Peter tells us he went to the imprisonment and spoke to the imprisoned spirits. Most of us believe, a lot of us believe, that was when he went down to that resting place of the dead and brought all of those who died in anticipation of the Messiah, who looked forward to the Messiah, brought them out and took them to heaven. And so who's left then is those that died without any looking forward to the Messiah, both Gentiles and Jews. You know, there were Jews that didn't believe in the Messiah, you know, or didn't think much about it, Sadducees for one, who didn't believe in that. So, you know, from, and I know we're trying to fit something much bigger than our mind into some finite little set of things so that we can think we're organized. But the reality is, I think that happened. And once that happened, then you've got a much different situation in terms of who's left and who isn't. So I'm going to postulate here that what this means is, if you consider at that time, all of the Jews who died in advance and believed in the Messiah and looked forward to the Messiah, spiritually, were now in heaven. Then in this time, those who die or come to Christ in the tribulation period in belief will be found, their name will be found written in the book of life. And so they will also come and be delivered. And so you ask, well, who's left then? Well, those who don't believe, Gentiles and Jews. I mean, there will be Jews that don't believe, and there will be Gentiles that don't believe, even after all the stuff that goes on. And they will not believe, and they will remain, and they will not be delivered. They will be left in Hades for what's called the Great White Throne Judgment. So I bring that up only to kind of explain what this verse means here, at least what I think this verse means. So I do think he's telling Daniel that a remnant of the Jews is going to be delivered. But they're going to have to, something about their name being written in the book has to be discovered, has to be understood. And of course, that really became clear when Christ came. It wasn't clear up until that. And Jews died in anticipation of the coming of the Lord.
Is that where, partly where predestination, that thought comes?
Well, that thought comes from later in the Bible where it says that God knew before we were born whether we would be in heaven or whether we wouldn't. So they talk about that as being predestined. I don't think that's what that means personally. I think what that means is God's not surprised. Whether you come or whether you don't come, he's not surprised. But he doesn't force you to do that. You may have to make that choice. Now, he knows what your choice is because he's God. But that doesn't mean that if you don't have a choice. In other words, I don't want to get off too far into this, but you know, you can, people who believe in that predestination, Calvinist kind of belief, come to the idea that if you are destined to be saved, there's nothing you can do that will stop you from being saved. By the same token, if you are saved, there's nothing you can do to quench the spirit or do anything else to satisfy that. Now, most what I would call Reformed Christians today don't believe that. They believe that we have a choice. And the Bible is very clear that we have a choice. But it's also clear that God knows what we're going to do. So how do you make those come to pass? You make them come to pass by saying that we have a free choice. God knows what it's going to be, but we have a free choice. And we can choose to not come, even though everything is in front of us to make us come. And I think that's what we see here. There will be people who have the choice, even clearer than it is today. You know, that commercial that says this choice is even, it's the bank card commercial, you know, but picking a basketball player, you know, like Shaquille O'Neal to be on your little kid's team. It's a choice that's going to be made, obvious choice. But even in this time, people will not make that choice. They will choose to stay on the dark side, if you look at it that way. Good point, though. And so at that time, Michael, the great prince who protects your people, will arise. Oh, I already read that, so let me go down to 3. Those who are wise will shine like the brightness of the heavens. those who lead many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. The wise here is wise in the ways of the Lord. It's not book smart. This is wise in the ways of the Lord. In other words, you understand the Lord. Your belief and confidence in the Lord is high. And if you are one of those people who is faithful to the Lord, you will shine like the brightest stars in heaven. He's talking about at the end time now. And those who lead many to righteousness, like the stars forever and ever. That's an interesting phrase to me. And I think it you could really quickly think, well, that's a phrase that applies to pastors and teachers. And it does. But it also is a phrase that applies to all of us. Because, you know, whether we are an encourager, whether we're a helper, whether we come alongside somebody who's in trouble, whether we're a caregiver, whatever situation we find ourselves in, if we come in the name of the Lord to do that ministry, or whatever God has called us to do, we are leading people to righteousness, either by our example, or by our words, or by our actions, whatever we do. So in my mind, this is something not just for them, but it's also for us. It speaks to us in this time that when we're called by God, we're not called just to go to heaven. We're called to do something here on earth. We'll talk about that a little more in a minute, because there's a couple of more things I want to say about that later. So he tells Daniel that those who are wise are going to shine like the stars, and those who have helped people along, bringing them towards the righteousness of God, getting right with God, you'll be stars forever. But you, Daniel, roll up and seal the words of the scroll until the time of the end. Many will go here and there to increase knowledge. These are two interesting sentences to me. So Daniel is writing down everything. Now, we don't know that Daniel has written everything here, because he's told to roll up and seal the words of the scroll. Now, so remember, this is not a book, it's a scroll. And you roll it up and you put a wax seal or some kind of a seal on it to make it so it's not openable. And he tells Daniel to seal up the words. And that's kind of interesting, until the time of the end. Again, that speaks to the notion that some of these words and some of these prophecies will be unknown to us. And then all of a sudden, something in the world will happen. And you'll say, gosh, I can see how that would happen now. I see where that's possible. It wasn't possible yesterday, but today it's possible. And I think that's what he means here. And also, many will go here and there to increase knowledge. This is really a sign of the times. And one of the things, I think there's two ways to look at this. One of them is we're going to seek knowledge. And if you're in the world today and you're paying attention, you cannot keep up with what's going on. I mean, the internet, technology, things are happening at such a pace that we simply cannot keep up. You know, and I know for us, sometimes it's a little hard. We have to get our, you know, grandchildren to come help us do something, you know, technology wise. But, you know, that's the way it is. And that's the way, it's a sign of the end times. Technology will increase. But the other way to look at that is, and some people look at it this way, is people will be looking for the Lord in this time. And understand, in the time of tribulation, the church is gone. We're gone. So the church is gone. The indwelling spirit that lives within us is gone. We're all raptured out. So what's left is something we leave. Our testimony stays. The Bible stays. The tapes and books that are written stay. And people can read those. If you are interested in end times and you go online and look, people sell these, anything to make a buck. People are selling these after the rapture kits, you know, where you have your set of verses in your book. And, you know, you leave it in somebody's name after the rapture, read this, you know, put this thing in, read that. And that's not a bad idea, because it puts all the resource in one place. But that resource will be left. But many will be looking for that resource. And because there are no pastors, there are no teachers, there are no godly men and women here to talk to them, they will look far and wide and will have trouble finding it. That's the other way to look at this. And I think probably both are true. You can imagine today, let me just play a little hypothetical here. You can imagine today if the rapture occurred today. Some of you in the choir wanted to come before 3 o'clock, I know. but if it doesn't, let's say it comes tonight, what's left tomorrow? I mean, who in your family is left? Who in the country is left? You know, we joked about, well, probably Washington's pretty much intact. We joked about that. But, you know, a great swath of the country is going to be gone. And all the believing pastors, and I mean those that are, you know, what we would call born again, those pastors are not going to be here. And all the born again believers in these churches are not going to be here. It's going to be a hard time. You know, not only chaos with everybody gone, but it'll be a hard time just to try to understand what happened. And the media won't help us. You know, they'll think the Hale-Bopp comet came through and took us all away, or some, you know, alien abduction. They'll have a scheme to explain it away. But I think you can see how this could come to pass now. Many will go here and there to increase knowledge, and they won't find it. It'll be hard to find. So Daniel's getting some interesting information, and you can't look at it and say, this is exactly what this means. But we do have a sense for it. You know, God has left us at a time when we are not in darkness, but we're in the light, and we can see things in the light. So Daniel is thinking to himself, man, I have no idea what this guy's talking about. No clue. And he says, then I, Daniel, looked. And I put looked in red because the word is really beheld, behold. You know, we talked about in John, there's a difference in seeing something and beholding something. You know, if you see it, you see it. I've got peripheral vision and I see a lot of things happening over here, but I don't pay any attention to them. But if you look at something and you focus on it, then you're beholding it, and you get a different sense of that object or that person as you do that. So Daniel looks and he beholds. Suddenly, two others stand before him, one on one bank of the river and one on the opposite bank. I highlighted the word others also, because in English, we don't get a good sense of this. But in both Greek and in Hebrew, there are two words that are important. And I'll liken it this way. If I got a number two pencil, and I got a box of number two pencils, and I'm writing with a number two pencil, and I wear it out, or I break it off, or I wear the eraser out more likely, and I get down to the end, and I reach into the box and get another number two pencil, I've gotten another of the same kind. But if my pencil breaks and I reach over and I get a mechanical pencil that I have to turn the lid, I've got a pencil, but it's not a pencil of the same kind. It's a different kind. This word for others here is two others of the same kind. So in other words, what Daniel sees here is two more angels standing on the bank of the river. These angels are apparently a little lower rank than the one who's above the river. And so they ask the man clothed in linen, it's the one above the river, who is above the waters, how long will it be before these astonishing things are fulfilled? You know, this is a question Daniel had. This is a question we all have, really. You know, when will it happen? How long will it be? And the man clothed in linen, the what I call the speaking angel here, the speaking angel lifted both his left and right hand to heaven. And I heard him swear by him who lives forever, saying it will be for a time, times, and a half time. Let me stop there for a minute. Normally, if you swear an oath, you raise one hand, right? He raises two hands. Now, is that just a coincidence? Do angels always read two hands? I don't know. But it also kind of gives you an idea, maybe the solemnity of this oath is important. This is an important oath. There's also two angels in addition to the speaking angel, but only one of them says anything. The other one stands over there and doesn't say anything. So why are there two angels? I don't know the answer to that. But here's a possible answer. In Jewish law, it took two witnesses to confirm the truth of something. So two angels are standing there to confirm the truth of what God has spoken, in my opinion. I mean, I may be wrong, but I'm sticking to that story anyway, because it sounds good. So anyway, and then he says it'll be for a time, times, and half a time. Your Bible may take this and make a little more of a translation out of it and say for a year, 2 years, and a half a year. What this really means, the time is a year, the times is 2 years, and the half a time is a half a year. And when you add those up, what do you get? 3.5 years. So we see 3.5 years as kind of a common thing when we start talking about this 7-year period. And then he says, when the power of the holy people has finally been broken, all these things will be completed. Interesting thought. And again, this thought in my mind, remember, Christians are gone. We're out of here. I mean, there may be some that have come to Christ, certainly with 144,000 witnesses and the two witnesses. There's some that have come to Christ, a lot of Jews. But they go along with this Antichrist because he's looks to be good for Israel. He's bringing peace to the world. But in the middle of that time, 3.5 years, he desecrates the temple. Also means there has to be a temple, by the way. So he desecrates the temple. He declares himself God. And all of a sudden, the scales fall from the eyes of the Jewish believers. And now they see him for who he is. And he goes after them. He goes after everybody who's a believer. And he says, and God has protected them all. Protected them all. But now he goes after them, and their power is finally broken. If you remember from other scenes, you know that the Jews scurry out of Jerusalem and go to a place of hiding, many people think Petra, and hide there for the second coming when the Lord returns. Because the battle to fix this is not of the Jews. The battle to fix this is a battle of the Lord's, and it's fought spiritual battle. It's fought that way. And so finally, when the holy people run for the hills, when they've been defeated and broken spiritually, then they will head to the hills because that's what they're told to do. All these things will be completed. In other words, they'll come along and be finished. And so Daniel says, probably what we're saying, I hear that, but I don't understand it. So I ask, my Lord, what will the outcome of this be? So Daniel's sitting there and he's thinking, he's done living 2023. So all of this stuff is magic in the future for him. And he wants to know the bottom line. Tell me what the outcome is going to be. I don't want to know all the details. Just tell me the outcome. How are we going to finish? How's it going to do? And what does the angel say? Go your way, Daniel, because the words are rolled up and sealed until the end of time. You know, we want to know all of this, but the angel left Daniel hanging. He's sort of leaving us hanging because we don't really understand all of it. He does give Daniel some personal information, though, which is important. He finishes by saying, many will be purified and made spotless and refined, but the wicked will continue to be wicked. Now, let me just say, during this tribulation period, if you've read Revelation, you understand that millions of people will die at this time because of poisoned water, because of hailstones, because of earthquakes, because of volcanoes, all floods, everything is going to come. But the remnant of the Lord will be purified, made spotless and refined. Now, does that mean they survive? It doesn't. Because when you get in Revelation, all the souls under the altar are crying, Lord, when are you gonna judge them for what they did to us? So they're in heaven under the altar, waiting for that judgment to happen. But they will be purified. And you know, when you heat, I know you've heard this analogy, but when you take silver or gold, let's say silver, and you put it in a little bucket and you heat it to a certain degree, the silver melts. And the more you heat it, the impurities in the silver float to the top, or gold, and they're called dross, and they're taken off. And the more impurities you take off, the purer the silver or gold is underneath, the more refined it is. What he's really saying is during this time of tribulation, the believers are going to be purified. It's going to be hot. They're going to be heated up, and all the impurities are going to be driven out. They're either going to come to the Lord in full faith on their knees, thanking him for what he's done, or they're going to run away. And this is where that happens. This is where push comes to shove, if you will, in the end times. And he says, but the wicked will continue to be wicked. Even with all of this happen, the wicked will not turn. The wicked will not come to the Lord. And I'll just say this to you, and I struggle with this myself. There are people we desperately want that are in our lives to come to the Lord. We can pray for them. We can talk to them. We can share with them. And I pray that they all come, but they may not. And they may not because their mind is set to not come. And there's nothing we can do about it. We can't force them to come. We can just share, you know, as when Jesus was building his ministry, he would witness to one, they'd bring another and say, come and see. Come and see Jesus. And when you see Jesus and you hear his words, you either believe or you don't. You know, and many walked away. And I think that'll be the case here. Many will walk away. The wicked will continue to be wicked. None of the wicked will understand, but those who are wise will understand. And I think what you'll find is, you know, even today you look at people and you say, how can they think that? I mean, don't they see what's going on? How do they believe what they believe? Well, they believe it because that's what their mind is set on, and they don't want to read or hear or, you know, the old saying, don't confuse me with the facts, my mind is made up. Sometimes that's the way it is with people. But those who are wise will understand. They will come to the Lord, those who are wise in the ways of the Lord. So I think what Daniel's being told here is that people are still going to have their choice, and people will make that choice. And not all of them will choose to come. Many of them won't. But those that are wise in the ways of the Lord will choose and will understand and will come to him. And then we finish with a couple of verses that I can't explain, and I'll do my best. From the time, so we're getting into the timing now. From the time that the daily sacrifice is abolished, so this is the midpoint of the tribulation period, okay? That causes desolation to be set up. There will be 1,290 days. Blessed is the one who waits for and reaches the end of the 1,335 days. Well, if you remember our discussion before, 1,260 days are 3.5 years. So 1,290 days is 30 days more. 1,335 days is another 45 days on top of that. And he says, blessed is the one who waits and reaches the end of 1,335 days. So what can we say about it? I think what we can say for sure is the one who is blessed and reaches the end of the time is the time when Christ comes back and sets up his earthly kingdom. We sort of, I think commentaries all agree that this is the time when the millennial kingdom is set up and now everything is right in the world and the Lord is running the world. So where did these other 30 and 45 days come in? I don't know the answer to that, but let me just hypothetically think about this. There's two things that have to happen. One is after the 1260 days, there has to be a time of judgment. We call it the Great White Throne Judgment. That could take 15 days, 30 days. I don't know how long it takes for every man, woman, and child who is not in the Book of Life to appear before the Lord and have their life played back and be decided what's going to happen to them. Now, we know based on the fact that their name is not in the Lamb's Book of Life, they're going to be sent to the lake of fire or to, you know, everlasting damnation. But that could take some time. I don't know. And then the other thing is possible is Jesus has to set up his millennial kingdom. And we're told a couple of things. We're told we're going to rule and reign in that. Well, we're going to need some training for that. I mean, I don't know that he's going to just pop us in and say, you know, you take over Alabama. I said that for Debbie's benefit on here. But, you know, whatever.
A lot of training.
So I don't know what that means. I won't know until sometime when God chooses to make that plain to people. But I do think it's interesting because he's really saying, again, if you take away the date parts of it, he's really saying that at the end, God's will be done. And that blessing will come for those who persevere. And I think it's important for us to understand that even in this end times, you know, there's going to be a time when there's things we're not going to know. So I did say this. So maybe pure speculation, maybe the first 30 days is the setting up of the judgment time for the great white throne judgment. Perhaps the next 45, maybe when he sets up millennial kingdom. I don't know. I'm just hypothetical, being hypothetical with you, because I know two events have to happen, probably more than two, but at least two have to happen. And I don't know. You'd think he could just snap his fingers and do it too. So I don't know what the deal is here, but I don't know the answer to that truth. But God knows. Daniel didn't know, and we don't know. So it's kind of interesting because we leave this with a charge that the angel gives to Daniel. And I think this charge is one that fits for us as well. And he says, as for you, Daniel, go your way until the end. In other words, keep doing what you're doing. Do what you've been called to do, and your end will come. Then you will rest, a biblical euphemism for being dead. You will rest, and at the end of days, you will rise to receive your allotted inheritance. Again, the cross is not in view here. This is an Old Testament discussion about the 70th week of Daniel, and the whole thing of the cross hasn't appeared yet. There's some allusions to it, but it hasn't appeared yet. But Daniel knows that at the end of time, he will rise, and he will be in the company of the Lord and assigned his inheritance, his allotted inheritance. Now, I can't help but believe, you know, Daniel, who ruled the Persian Empire, big pieces of it, the Babylonian Empire, will get a job in the millennial kingdom, ruling probably Mississippi and Arkansas. I don't know. Try to add some levity, but who knows? But he's going to be a big part of it. It's interesting to think that we're going to meet all these characters in the end. We're going to meet them all, the ones that are, you know, certainly the ones that are biblical. So I guess the question is now, what does that mean for us? What are we to do until the end comes? Well, I think for us, the whole thing for us is to keep doing what we've been called to do. Whatever you're called to do, you need to keep doing. And whatever you're led by the Spirit to do, you need to keep doing. Because we don't know when the end will come. It could come tomorrow. It could come a year from now. It could come sometime later. I don't really know. But God expects us to be faithful until that time. And if we are, then we will be there for the blessings to come at the end for our service. You know, we all want that well done, good and faithful servant. We all want that accolade when we get to heaven. And I think this is the way Daniel had to do it, and this is the way we have to do it. So I'm going to summarize Daniel. We're finished with the book of Daniel now, so praise the Lord. We're finished with the book of Daniel. So here's, this is small print, so let me read it to you as we go through. We learned Daniel was a real person and he wrote about real events in his lifetime. That's important. We learned that he was blessed by God in his faithfulness to do what God called him to do and dependent on God to provide whatever he had. He pulled him out of the lion's den. He, you know, saved him during the change of empires. The purpose of Daniel is to show us that God is a sovereign God, and God alone sets up and removes kings and kingdoms. That's important for us to know as we traverse our time here. Daniel was given extraordinary vision and insight into the future by God. He didn't understand it at all. He saw and revealed great Gentile kingdoms to come in astonishing detail many hundreds of years before it happened. History has proven the accuracy of these prophecies. He's prophesied replacement kingdoms that we call the revived Roman Empire. We're seeing the first parts of that begin to appear today, and key aspects of its satanic-inspired ruler, who we call the Antichrist or the man of sin or the beast, comes up out of the water, or the man of lawlessness or the man of perdition. All of that is who he is, and we see a glimpse of him in Daniel. We got a timeline until the coming of Messiah. We talked about that when we went through that section on the, you know, the 7 years and the 63 years and the 69 years, 69 weeks of years, and how that told us about the Palm Sunday, the coming of the Lord. We've got a vision of the Messiah and the coming kingdom, that rock and the statue coming. He's given us a view of the life and death of the Messiah and the future kingdom of Israel. He's given us a view of the final week of years, not all the detail, but the judgment comes at the end. And he gives us a few things to look for, you know, in that time frame. He's given us hope. And I think that's important. He's given us hope to know that God is in control. No matter how desperate it looks, no matter how bad we think things are, God is in control. And if, like Daniel, we can rest in his sovereign power and rest in his understanding that, you know, he is in control, then it'll be good. It'll be good. He's given us the knowledge that God and all the good things will ultimately triumph, and the people of God will triumph over evil and Satan, and they are eternally punished, and we will live with him eternally, and they will live separately, banished from God, death, Antichrist, false prophet, all of them banished. And he's given us a prophetic framework as we read other prophetic books like Ezekiel, Zechariah, Revelation, to fit into how this fits into the world. We can see more revelation by reading the book of Revelation than we got in the book of Daniel, but it all accompanies one another and fits very nicely. So I think if we can keep this in mind, we're good. And I'll finish with this. It's a famous phrase that Jan Markell always uses, and I like it. Things aren't falling apart, they're falling into place. And the Lord will come with a shout, the trumpet sound, and we'll be taken up in a moment. In a twinkle of an eye, we'll be with the Lord forever. And I think that's what we have to look forward to. And you know, I pray that that is sooner rather than later. But whenever it comes, we just need to be prepared for it. Any comments or questions on the book of Daniel? Any thoughts? Yeah, Donna.
I was reading the footnote in my Bible about 30. Maybe the event following the war on the head, where the wind will carry away all the, what's going to happen to all the...
Yeah, well, it could be. The War of Armageddon, we know, takes 7 years for Israel to capture the weapons and bury all the dead and do all that. It's an interesting, all these dates are hard to figure out, you know, what happens. But just know that God has it in control. He's got it figured out, otherwise the angel wouldn't have told it to Daniel. Good point. Others? 7 months, not 7 years, excuse me. 7 months. 7 years between.
Yeah, I think we need to continue to speak to our children, and our grandchildren, and great-grandchildren on this topic. So they understand they have a calling to expand the kingdom. Whatever, whether it's in school or whether it's in the workplace, and how the Lord works through you is just unbelievable.
Well, we are His arms,
yeah,
and His hands and His feet in this time of the church thing. So that's a good point. We need to do that. Well, let's close in prayer so we can all finish here. Lord, we're just thankful for this time. We're thankful for the book of Daniel. We're thankful for Him writing it. We're thankful for the angels that came to speak. Lord, we don't understand it, but we are confident that you have exactly the plan in mind, and the schedules and dates are already on your heavenly calendar. And Lord, we just pray that we'll be faithful in our time to follow what you've called us to do. And Lord, speak to us plainly. Tell us what you want us to do. Tell us how you want us to do it. And Lord, empower us and give us the strength through your Spirit to do the work you've called us to do. Lord, I pray for the pastor as he comes. I pray for the choir and the orchestra as they play. I pray for the services this afternoon. I pray that people who come from the community will be drawn to you. And they'll seek more information on how to become a Christian. Lord, I pray for the empowerment of all who are speaking, praying, preaching in the afternoon. I pray it all in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you all. Thank you.